troubled because of the frowning faces he was met with from John and Sarah Potter, Pearlie felt as if he had walked into a courtroom and he was on trial. In contrast, Lena's face was lit up with a satisfied smile that reached from ear to ear. He was about to ask what Lena had told them, but Sarah Potter didn't give him the chance before she began telling him what was going to happen. "Welcome to our home, young man," she started. "You're doing the right thing, taking this girl to Deadwood, and you should be applauded for that. She says you're in a big hurry to get there, but she needs some attention before she'll be ready to go on. So you'll just have to cool your heels for a little while till she's ready." When she was met with a look of pure astonishment on Pearlie's part, she added, "To make up for it, there won't be any charge for your dinner. Or hers." She stared sternly at him, waiting for his response, as if she anticipated some disagreement from him. He didn't reply right away, glancing again at Lena, who was still smiling. It was easy to guess that she had painted a picture for them, and he wasn't sure if he had been depicted as the villain or not. "Whatever Lena thinks is best," he said. "Oh," Sarah blurted in surprise, obviously expecting an argument. Then, not sure he realized what she meant, she went on. "She needs a good bath and something decent to put on, not just food." "I reckon you're right about that," he agreed. "But I didn't think she'd appreciate it if I tried to give her a bath." Lena couldn't help laughing outright at that. It served to alleviate the tension John Potter had begun to build up when his wife started to lay down the law to the young stranger. He realized that Pearlie was joking and nodded his approval, when Pearlie continued. "I don't normally carry a spare dress in my packs, but I did let her use my coat till we got to a place where we might buy one." He gave Lena a wink and concluded, "If it's going to take too long before you get her ready to ride, I can just leave her here with you folks, and I'll go along about my business." "No, no," Sarah quickly replied. "It won't take us that long. I've got several old dresses that I can't wear anymore. At least one of them ought to be just right for her. We won't delay you any more than necessary to take a nip and a tuck in it, and you'll be on your way. To look for your grandpa, was that it?"
"Yes, ma'am," Pearlie replied. Feeling comfortable now and enjoying his wife's retreat, Potter laughed and asked, "What's your name, young feller?"
"Pearlie Gates," he answered. Seeing the reaction in Potter's face, and accustomed to it, he went on to explain that he was named for his grandfather. More interested in Pearlie then, Potter asked if his grandpa knew he was coming to find him. So Pearlie told them the whole story behind his trip, all the way from Texas, to search for his grandfather.
"And he ain't ever seen you?" Potter asked when Pearlie had finished. "And he don't even know his grandson is named after him?"
"That's a fact," Pearlie said. "And now that my pa's dead, my ma thought Grandpa ought to know about it." Potter shook his head, thinking about it.
"That's a powerful long way just to tell that old man you're his grandson."
"My ma thinks it's important," Pearlie declared. "And that's enough reason for me." Potter's wife nodded approvingly after that remark, deciding that she liked Pearlie even more. She finished slicing strips from a salt-cured ham to fry with some eggs and serve with cold biscuits and hot coffee.
"You folks sit down and eat, and I'll heat some hot water for a bath after you're done," she announced.
While they ate the ham and eggs Sarah Potter had prepared, Lena watched Pearlie for a few long minutes before she asked,
"Are you thinking about stopping in Custer City?"
She wanted to remind him that Custer City was where Mott Mason was heading, and Pearlie had told her they would go around that town. Understanding her fears, Pearlie nevertheless knew he had to find out if his grandpa had stopped there.
"I know what I told you, but you can see that it's important that I make sure we're still on Grandpa's trail. We'll find you a good place to hide, and I'll go into town by myself. Shouldn't take long. Then I'll be right back, and we'll go to Deadwood. All right?"
"I reckon," she said without much enthusiasm. When she had finished eating, Sarah marched her off to the washroom. Pearlie almost didn't recognize Lena when Sarah brought her back. She was dressed in a plain cotton dress, but Sarah had washed and combed her hair so that she looked like a proper young lady. Were it not for the sassy expression upon her face, Pearlie might have mistaken her for someone else.
"Dang," he teased. "Maybe I should have brought a carriage."
She made a face, but said nothing.
"Are you ready to ride, ma'am?"
"I reckon I am," she replied. "If you think you can quit gawking long enough to get started."
"How far is Custer City from here?" Pearlie asked Potter, and was told it was a distance of about 15 miles.
"That'll put us there by supper time."
He glanced at Lena. "I'll find a good place to leave you and the sorrel while I take a quick look around."
He climbed up into the saddle, then reached down to give Lena a hand as she climbed up.
"Much obliged to both of you for your hospitality," he said, and wheeled Buck away from the porch.
John and Sarah Potter remained on the porch, watching them until they forded the creek and returned to the stage road.
"I hope that young man has sense enough to take that girl someplace where she'll be all right," Sarah remarked.
"He strikes me as being cut out of the right kind of cloth," John said. "I'm more worried about what he could do to protect her if they was to run into that Mason feller she talked about. He's wearing a Colt 44. I wonder if he knows how to use it, if he was forced to. Looks more like he ought to be toting a Bible instead."
He started down the steps.
"We ought to be getting a stagecoach in here before long. I'd best go see if the boys are ready to change that team of horses."
Later that afternoon, the outer buildings of Custer City came into view as they approached a valley with mountains on both sides. There was no need for comment. Pearlie could feel Lena tense up, so he sought to put her at ease right away. He pulled Buck back to a stop while he took a look at the town ahead of them. After a few moments, he pointed toward the hills to the west.
"We'll head toward those hills and find some water and grass for the horses. It looks like that might be a creek or a stream cutting down through that stand of pines."
As he had assumed, they found a stream flowing down from the mountain where he had pointed, and not surprising, the remains of an old mining claim, now abandoned.
"Good a place as any," Pearlie decided. So they unloaded the pack horse and gathered some wood for a fire.
"I reckon you'll be all right here till I get back. I'll leave you my rifle, just in case."
"You're going to town right away?" Lena asked. "Before you eat?"
"I reckon so. I want to catch the blacksmith or livery man before they go to supper."
She nodded, then said,
"I guess you'll be stopping in at a saloon before you come back to eat."
"Well, I hadn't planned to," he replied.
"How do I know you'll come back? You might be thinking it'd be a whole lot easier for you if you didn't have to bother with me."
He was really quite surprised to hear her sudden return to the fear she had when they first met. Pearlie couldn't help wondering if she had lost her cocksure attitude at Potter's place. Maybe it got washed off in the bathwater. It occurred to him that she had probably never had a good relationship with any man. Her father sold her for a cow and a little money to boot, and the man who bought her treated her like a slut. Pearlie guessed it was only natural that she would paint all men with the same brush, especially since she was no more than 13 or 14.
"Well, you can be pretty sure I aim to come back, 'cause I'm leaving my pack horse, my rifle, and all my supplies with you."
"Oh, that's right. I forgot about that." Her usual saucy attitude returned at once.
"Well, you'd best not take too long, or I'll cook supper for myself and leave you to cook your own meal."
"I'll get back as soon as I can," he assured her. "I aim to take you to Deadwood."
He could feel her watching him as he rode off toward town. He came to the stable first, but no one there recalled ever having seen his grandfather, so he rode up the street to the blacksmith shop to find the smithy hard at work on an axle. He stopped when Pearlie pulled up.
"Yes, sir,"
Can I help you, sir?
I'm trying to catch up with my grandpa, Burley said. I was wondering if you might have stopped by your place.
It's hard to say, Jim Coker replied. What does he look like?
Little old fellow, Purley said. His name's Purley Gates. A wide smile broke out on Coker's face.
Purley Gates, I remember that man. Funny little old man riding a paint horse. He might be the reason Lem Wooten sold this forge to me for a right good price. That was about a month ago.
Do you know where he is? Purley asked.
No. He came looking for Lem and must have told him something that built a fire under Lem's behind. As soon as I gave Lem the money, they didn't wait around for a second. Got on their horses and rode straight out of town.
He pointed toward the north end of town.
It had to be his grandpa.
Purley still didn't know for sure where the two of them were heading when they left Custer, but it was logical to assume it was Deadwood. He thanked Coker for his help, immediately turned Buck around, and headed back toward his camp. He was eager to get on the road to Deadwood, but the horses had already gone 30 miles that day. That was not too many, even though much of it was rough going, but it would be better to start out fresh in the morning. Besides, Lena most likely had already begun cooking supper, maybe even making biscuits if she was in the right mood. When he rode over the low ridge next to the stream, he was surprised to see no one where he thought he had made his camp. There was no fire, no horse, and no Lena. At first, he thought he must be too far along the ridge. He looked right and left, searching for signs of smoke in either direction. There were none, and he knew he was not mistaken. This was where his camp was supposed to be.
She ran off on me.
It hit him totally by surprise. He would have bet against it.
"Damn it," he blurted out. "She's got my rifle and my horse, and everything I need to cook with."
John and Reuben are right, he thought. Once again he was reminded of his brother's fondness for japing him, about his tendency to step in a cow pie more often than most. "Well, she ain't gonna get away with it," he swore to himself. "I should have left her back there in the mountains where I found her." Determined to track her, he stepped down from the saddle and started searching the ground beside the stream for tracks that might show him which way she had gone. There were tracks, clearly defined by the sorrel's new shoes, where he had left him by the stream. Purley suddenly stopped when he saw the clear tracks of a wagon, fresh tracks that were not there when he left the sorrel before. He was sure he would have seen them. He followed the wagon tracks until they crossed over the low mound at the end of the ridge. Standing there, he looked in the direction the tracks led. It was apparent they were heading toward the stage road to Deadwood. He felt certain then that she had not run off. She had been taken. Somehow this Mott Mason had found her, for Purley knew that was what had to have happened. Angry at her only seconds before, he was now angry with himself for not being there to try to protect her. He wasted no more time wondering how Mason had happened to find her. It was extremely unlikely that anyone had seen them when they rode west of the town and picked a place to camp. Mason had either just happened to look for a place to rest his horse in the same spot Purley had, or he had somehow been able to track them. The fact of the matter was that somehow Mason had found her, so Purley's only option now was to catch them as quickly as he could. And that wouldn't be hard to do, since they were driving a wagon and would have to think about stopping for the night pretty soon. Following the deep wagon tracks across the valley, Purley soon came to the stage road, north of Custer City, and the angle at which the tracks intercepted the road indicated that Mason intended to continue north. Conscious of Buck's hooves pounding out the miles on the well-traveled road, Purley was thankful that the big bay had gone only about 30 miles so far that day. He didn't anticipate the wagon making more than 10 miles before darkness, so he started looking for likely camping spots almost immediately. There were many streams cutting across the narrow valley, most of them too small for him to consider following them up the slopes. Still, he paused at each one and looked for signs of smoke
that might indicate a camp up in the trees.
"You want me to untie her from the back of the wagon now?"
Belle Tatum asked.
"Hell yeah," Mott Mason blurted. "She ain't gonna sit around and watch the rest of us work."
He walked around to the tailgate with Belle, prepared to set out some rules. Addressing Lena, he asked, "Did you enjoy your walk from Custer?
We was all glad to have you come back to the family after your little vacation, wasn't we, ladies?"
He glanced at the two women sullenly watching him, receiving no more than blank stares in response. Back to Lena, then, he said,
"Trouble with folks taking vacations is they have to pay for them when they come back. Now, it would have been a little easier on you if you'd have come back on your own, instead of me having to find you. Might even let you ride in the wagon. Looks to me like you still ain't got it in your head that I own you. Bought and paid for. And I don't let nobody cheat me out of my money. And I gave a damn good milk cow to boot."
He paused to chuckle at the thought.
"Of course, it don't make no difference if I stole the damn cow from that sodbuster down the road from your pappy's farm."
Maintaining a tight-mouthed silence to that point, Lena felt compelled to say,
"People ain't for sale. If you had any sense at all, you might have heard there was a war about that not too long ago."
Her comment earned her a hard backhand that knocked her to the ground. Lucy Drover took her arm and helped her up, frowning at her in an effort to warn her not to rebel. Lucy, like Belle, felt compassion for the young girl, but they were in no position to help her. Both approaching middle age, they were with Mason voluntarily. Or, since they were Lena's age, they had run out of choices to survive. Mason was likely their last chance. With a determined look of defiance, Lena steadied herself on her feet again.
"You just ain't gonna learn, are you?" Mason slurred. "You act like a little girl, then I reckon I'll have to treat you like one. Bend over and lean on that tailgate. Lucy, you and Belle hold her hands down. Little youngins act up, then they gotta get a spanking."
He took his belt off, pulled up Lena's skirt, and proceeded to whip her until she dropped to her knees.
"Now," he said, "get yourself together and collect some wood for a fire."
He started to go unhitch the horse, but stopped to give her a final warning.
"You try to run off again, and I'll shoot you down. It won't be no spanking next time."
Lena did as she was told, and helped Belle and Lucy cook some of the smoked venison from Pearlie's packs. Before he ate his supper, Mason uncorked the last bottle of the whiskey he had bought in Custer City. He leaned back against the front wagon wheel and leered at the runaway returned.
"You got any whiskey in them other packs?"
When she answered no, he asked,
"Where the hell did you get that horse? You ain't never said yet."
"I stole it," she said, thinking it better than telling him who it belonged to.
"Took it from a mining claim back yonder in the mountains."
She felt bad about costing Pearlie his horse and rifle. She didn't want to take the chance that Mott might go after everything else Pearlie owned. Mott was evil to the core, and she was afraid he would be too much for Pearlie to handle.
"Stole it, huh?" Mason grunted. "Good. Maybe you're starting to learn how this world operates. It's about time I started teaching you how to be a good whore, how to please a man, so he'll keep coming back for more. You'll be as good as Belle and Lucy, and you ain't old and wrinkled like they are."
There was no reaction apparent from either of the older women, but Lena could imagine they felt the same disgust that sickened her. He had talked before about bedding her, as if it was some kind of ritual that he alone knew about. The dread of it was the primary reason she decided to risk escaping when they were trying to push the wagon up that rocky trail. Now he was talking again about bedding her, and the thought of the vile man approaching her was enough to make her wish she was dead. Her only hope was that he would continue to empty his whiskey bottle, because he almost always passed out. If he did, she was going to run again. As the evening wore away, it began to look as if Lena's hopes might be realized, for Mason grew more and more obnoxious, and his slurred ramblings became an even mix of personal boasts and threats of violence. Unfortunately for Lena, when Mason's eyelid started drooping, he realized he was losing control. He had enough presence of mind to tie her hands and feet together and secure her to the wagon wheel.
"Now, by God," he announced, "anybody untying her will answer to me in the morning."
Helpless to do anything else, Lena lay close to the wagon wheel and tried to find a comfortable position, what with her hands and feet tied behind her back. Belle and Lucy rolled up in their blankets to sleep, afraid to offer any comfort to the young girl. In a short time, Mason started snoring, dead to the world. All Lena's efforts to settle into a comfortable position failed, and she resigned herself to lying awake all night. Soon, a nasal chorus of snoring dominated the chirping of the crickets in the nearby stream. After a long, miserable while, she succumbed to fatigue and drifted off to sleep. It was not to last long, however, for she was suddenly awakened by a hand clamped tightly over her mouth. Knowing that it was Mott, come to fulfill his threat to bed her, Lena struggled to resist him.
"Be quiet!"
The whispered command did not come from her drunken captor. Her heart threatened to leap from her chest. She knew the voice. When he felt her relax, he removed his hand from her mouth, cut the rope holding her to the wheel, then quickly went to work on the rope binding her hands and feet. When she was free, she immediately threw her arms around his neck, causing him to almost step into the coals of the fire.
"We gotta get out of here,"
he protested, unlocking her arms from his neck.
"Where's my rifle?" "Beside the wagon seat," she whispered.
He turned her around and pointed toward a clump of pine trees farther down the stream.
"Go and wait for me in those trees. I'll be right behind you." "What about your pack horse?" she whispered. "He's already in that bunch of trees. Pack's on him, ready to go. So get going."
She paused for a moment before leaving him.
"Don't shoot the women. They couldn't do nothing to help me."
She assumed he asked for his rifle because he intended to shoot them all.
"I ain't gonna shoot anybody," he said. "Now get going. I just ain't leaving my rifle."
She needed no further encouragement and immediately started creeping out of the camp, passing within several feet of the snoring drunk, resisting the urge to jam the empty bottle down his throat. Almost as if he sensed it, Mason grunted and turned over, coming awake momentarily, at least enough to mumble drunkenly,
"What the hell's going on?"
Standing by the front of the wagon, Pearlie raised his rifle, ready to react to Mason's next move. Lena had the presence of mind to reassure Mason.
"Nothing's going on. You're drunk. Go back to sleep."
Mason grunted and turned back on his side, causing Lena to giggle softly. She looked back at Pearlie, who was signaling frantically for her to get going, and waved in acknowledgement. Then she picked up Mason's boots and ran toward the trees Pearlie had pointed out. He was close on her heels, and when they reached the stand of trees, Lena paused to throw Mason's boots into the water.
"Come on," Pearlie urged. "We need to get out of here."
She continued to giggle as she watched the stream sweep the boots along, until Pearlie took her by the arm and pulled her toward the horses. Up behind him, she put her arms around his waist and held him tight, a broad smile painted on her face. There could not have been a rescue more dramatic in her mind, and surely never one so downright entertaining. She pictured the surly ogre when he woke up in the morning to discover her gone, and the pack horse, too. She buried her face in Pearlie's back in an effort to stifle her giggles as he guided Buck through the dark stand of trees. Chapter 16. After leaving Mott Mason's camp, Purley rode back to the Cheyenne Deadwood stage road and headed north, planning to ride through the night in order to keep well ahead of Mason. It was the only way he knew to find Deadwood, and the road was defined enough to follow in the dark of night. As far as Lena was concerned, she was in high spirits after her rescue, too high to be able to sleep, in fact. So he held Buck to a steady pace until he decided it time to rest the big horse. Having fully expected Lena to be terrified, Purley was astonished to find her almost giddy with thoughts of Mason's surprise when he awakened in the morning, and the rage he would go into when he couldn't find his boots. She became concerned for only a brief moment when she said, "I hope the son of a bitch don't take it out on Belle and Lucy." That moment was a short one, however, before her exuberance returned, and she was chuckling over the incident again. Part of her excitement was due to her perception of the rescue, which Purley would have no knowledge of. In Lena's world, before Purley came along, she was deemed to have no value among her family or others who knew her. Now, for the first time, someone had risked his life to rescue her, and that had to mean he thought she was important enough to save. She had considered the fact that Purley might have followed them just to recover his pack horse and other property, but he had already recovered the horse and hidden it in the trees before he came to get her. He could have simply ridden away, but he didn't. He came back for her. She knew she was mighty lucky to have crossed paths with Purley Gates. As she thought it, she couldn't help adding, "Even with a name like that." She had no idea if Purley was man enough to go up against a brute like Mott Mason, but she knew he was not afraid to come after her, and that pleased her. "This looks like as good a spot as any," he said, when they approached a wide stream that cut a channel across the wagon road. "We'll rest the horses here for a while, so you can start a fire and make some coffee if you want to." He crossed the stream and rode up the bank a short distance before reining Buck to a stop and helping Lena down. "I ain't expecting your friend to catch up with us with that one-horse wagon, but we'll keep moving tonight, just in case he's got wings on it." Without knowing if anyone in Mason's camp had alerted him to the missing girl before daylight, Purley couldn't say how far ahead they were. When he had retrieved his Winchester from beside the wagon seat, he had seen the two women sleeping in the wagon bed. At least they appeared to be asleep, and they sounded no alarm, so he was inclined to believe he had all the lead he needed. Although not sure if Mason would come after Lena, Purley had to assume that he was intent upon continuing to Deadwood, so Purley decided he'd best keep an eye on his back trail. In an effort to maintain his lead, he was back in the saddle when he felt Buck and the sorrel were rested, even though it was still in the early hours of the morning. The first rays of the sun found them approaching what appeared to be a small settlement, a mining town by the look of it. By this time they were both feeling the effects of a night on horseback without sleep, so when Purley spotted a large tent with a sign that said "Eats" hanging on the tent pole, he decided it would benefit them both to see what was being served for breakfast. There were no horses tied out front of the tent, so Purley figured he and Lena were too early. But there was smoke coming from a stovepipe sticking up through the top of the tent. They dismounted and tried the makeshift wooden door. Inside they found a rather large woman, wearing an apron and seated at the end of the one long table in the center of the tent. She was drinking a cup of coffee and looked up in surprise to see them.
"Well, good morning, folks. Are you two lost?"
"I reckon you could say that," Purley replied. There was a coffee pot sitting on one corner of a large iron stove at the rear of the tent. He motioned toward it and asked, "Any chance we could buy a cup of coffee from you?" She raised an eyebrow at that.
"Why, you sure can. Are you looking for breakfast?"
She got up to fetch a couple of cups.
"Yes, ma'am," Burley said. "Saw your sign out front."
You'll have to forgive me if I'm acting kind of strange. I ain't seen a customer in a couple of days. Since you folks are strangers, you probably did notice that almost all the tents and shacks on both sides of the creek are empty. It wasn't long ago you'd have had to stand in line outside my tent. Now the strike is in Deadwood, and I'm fixing to leave myself. But I can rustle you up some breakfast, just as long as it's pancakes you're craving. I'm out of everything but some side meat and mixins for pancakes. She shrugged as if helpless. So, what'll it be? I think I'll take pancakes, Burley said with a grin. How about you, Lena? That sounds good to me, she replied. I think I'll have pancakes, too. The woman responded with a big laugh. Good. Sit yourselves down, and I'll rustle you up some of the finest pancakes on French Creek. She went at once to get the coffee pot. My name's Mamie Dance, she said. Welcome to my diner. You folks might be the last two customers I serve before I close up and head to Deadwood Gulch. We'd be honored. Ain't that right, Lena? Did you say that creek is French Creek? Mamie nodded. Ain't French Creek where they made the first big strike? That's a fact, Mamie said. And now it's played out? Pearlie asked. Pretty much. There ain't but a few left, and most of them are fixing to go. She put some more wood in her stove and placed an iron skillet on top to heat up. Luckily, I've got some lard left, she muttered. Honey, she said to Lena, see that jug on the sideboard? That's pure maple syrup. You can set it on the table if you wanna. In a short while, Mamie served up two stacks of flapjacks, as she called them, and sat down to talk while they ate. You folks never been in Hill City before, have you? That's what they call the little town that sprung up here. You on your way to Deadwood, too? Reckon so, Pearlie answered. I guess we might as well join everybody else there. He decided not to mention the fact that they were in a hurry, since there might be somebody right behind them with evil intentions. If all your customers are gone, how come you're still here? Lena asked. Mamie shrugged, as if hesitant to answer. Well, I would be gone already, but I've got to stay for a while, because I'm taking care of somebody who's pretty bad off, and I can't go and leave him. Without somebody to take care of him, he'll die for sure, and I reckon I can't have that on my conscience. That's too bad, Lena said. Have you got a place to go in Deadwood? You know somebody there? Oh, I sure do, Mamie responded. I've got a dandy place in Deadwood where I'm going to be cooking. It's my son-in-law's hotel. Seeming to be interested, Lena asked another question. But you got to stay here to take care of somebody. Somebody in your family sick? No, he ain't family. Just a poor fella down on his luck. He wouldn't be at my place if he had anywhere else to go. He ain't no kin of mine, but I ain't got the heart to leave him to die. What's ailing him? Pearlie asked, interested now as well. Gunshot, Mamie answered. Gunshot? Pearlie responded. How'd he get shot? According to what he says, him and his partner were going down French Creek to an old mining claim to get some gold that was hid there. But after they got there, they were jumped by outlaws. He said the men came up on him one night while they were asleep. They never had a chance. Those horrible men walked into their camp while they were sleeping and just started blazing away. Shot both of them, stole their horses and everything else they had, and left them for dead. He said his partner was dead, and he played dead till the two killers were gone. That is mighty hard luck, all right, Pearlie said, slowly shaking his head. How'd he end up with you? He said he'd just started walking toward Hill City and almost made it before he just gave out. I found him lying in the mud before my shack when I went out to the outhouse one morning. I thought he was dead, but he opened his eyes when I poked him on the shoulder. "Where is he now?" Lena asked, since he was not in the tent.
In my shack, behind the tent, Mamie said. I made him as comfortable as I could. I didn't know what else to do for him, and I had to keep my eye on my business. With so many folks abandoned in this place, there's people going through empty shacks, taking anything they find, and I didn't want anybody hauling my stove off somewhere. She gave them a helpless look. I just look at him every night to see if he died yet. Ain't much else I can do for him. Try to feed him a little something, but I ain't got any red meat or beans left to give him any strength.
If he's still alive, Pearlie said, I've got some deer meat and beans, too, on my pack horse. I'd be glad to let you have some, and maybe you could build his blood back up to make him strong. He knew he could not do otherwise, even with the knowledge that Mott Mason might be on his heels. Lena must have been thinking the same thing, for she gazed at him intently, seeming to hang on his every word. Pearlie looked back at her and nodded his head.
I'll go with you, and we'll see if there's anything I can do, he said to Mamie. Anyway, I'll leave you some deer meat to cook up, 'cause I reckon you could use a little yourself.
Mister, I'm mighty glad you came along, Mamie exclaimed. Let me put the padlock on my door, and we'll go see how my patient is doing.
Might be a good idea to lead the horses around back, too, Pearlie told Lena, still thinking of Mott Mason, and hoping that he had a big enough hangover to discourage him from following them.
Mamie brought them behind the tent to a small board shack. There was a shed and a corral behind it that served as a shelter for one mule. Pearlie tied the horses to the corner post of the tiny porch, and he and Lena followed Mamie inside. The wounded man lay on a pallet of quilts near the fireplace. Dead or alive, it was hard to tell, so Pearlie knelt down close to him and placed his hand on his shoulder. The man opened his eyes and tried to draw away.
"Easy there, old-timer," Pearlie said softly, for he could see that the man was up there in years. His gray hair and whiskers were evidence of many winters.
"I ain't gonna hurt you. I want to take a look at your wounds. Maybe I can help."
He rolled the man gently over so he could inspect his wounds.
One in the chest, and looks like another one in his back.
Pearlie looked up at Mamie, and she nodded her agreement.
What's his name?
He said his name was Pearlie, Mamie answered. I don't know what his last name is.
Pearlie didn't speak for a long moment. In fact, he couldn't speak. He felt as if the blood was rushing away from his brain. Puzzled by his apparent state of shock, Mamie looked from him to Lena, only to see the same look of amazement in her eyes.
"Gates," Pearlie finally blurted. "His name is Pearlie Gates, same as mine."
This in turn shocked Mamie, leaving her to stand with her mouth open, but no words to come out.
"He's my grandpa, and he's the only reason I came out here to these mountains." Feeling a panic settling into his brain, Pearlie knew that everything depended upon his saving his grandfather. He could not believe that fate would be so unkind as to let him find his kin, then take him away before the old man knew who Pearlie was.
Lena, a stunned spectator to that point, stepped in then. She placed her hand on the old man's forehead.
"Why, hell, he's burning up with fever. We need to cool him down. No wonder he's acting out of his head."
She turned to Pearlie, then to Mamie. Since neither one of them seemed to know what to do, she took over.
"Pearlie, if you'll take that bucket over there and go to the creek for some cool water, we'll use it to cool him down. Mamie, have you got some rags we can use?"
While both Pearlie and Mamie jumped to do their bidding, she pulled the quilts away from the old man and unbuttoned his shirt. Next, she pulled his boots off and removed a pair of socks that looked like they had had a birthday on his feet. Inside one of the socks, there was a flap of deerskin wrapped around his foot, leading Lena to believe he must have sprained it. When Pearlie returned with the bucket of water, Lena cleaned away the dried blood from the bullet holes.
"They're all red and puffy-looking," she said. "He needs a doctor."
Since there was none available, they decided to do what they could to bring his temperature down, then see if he had the constitution to survive the gunshots.
Pearlie and Lena continued to apply cool rags to the old man's forehead, feet, and chest for several hours, until Pearlie turned the job over to Mamie while he went to take care of the horses. He apologized to Buck for not removing his saddle until then, and walked both horses down to the creek to drink. While he stood on the bank watching them, his thoughts strayed from his grandfather for a few moments and drifted back to Mott Mason. Whether Mason was bent on tracking him down or was just following the stage road to Deadwood, he would no doubt pass Mamie's tent, just as Pearlie had. But with the lock on the door, Mason should have no reason to stop there. He should drive straight through, depending upon what time of day or night he reached Hill City. And that was the one thing Pearlie couldn't accurately predict. But he decided he would have to be damn unlucky if Mason stopped to camp in the town. Returning his thoughts to his grandfather, he would graze his horses on what little grass was left on the bank of the creek, and he would sleep with them that night. Lena could stay inside the shack with Mamie and his grandpa, and Pearlie would see if there was any improvement in the morning. When he went back inside to tell them, he was pleased to find Lena confident that the old man was finally showing signs of cooling down.
"We'll get his fever down," she said. "He opened his eyes a little while ago, and I swear, I thought he was going to say something."
Mamie smiled and added,
"I believe Lena's got a real gift for healing. He might come around after all, and I sure wouldn't have believed it this morning when I left him."
She paused, a serious expression on her face.
"If you came all the way from Texas to find him, I just know the Lord wouldn't let you come this close and not let your grandpa know you."
It was early the next morning when Pearlie came inside, after sleeping near his horses all night. He found Lena dozing in a rocking chair near the fireplace and Mamie asleep in her bed. He thought to make a fire in the fireplace to fix some coffee, but decided to take a look at his grandfather first. The old man looked peaceful enough, so much so, in fact, that Pearlie thought he might be dead. A few seconds later, he was startled when the old man's eyes suddenly snapped open, and he demanded,
"Who the hell are you?"
When Pearlie seemed too surprised to answer, Lena, having been awakened by the old man's outburst, answered for him.
"He's your grandson."
She got up out of the rocking chair and came over to place her hand on his forehead.
"That fever's gone." "Grandson?" the old man echoed. "I ain't got no grandson."
"Maybe you ain't," Pearlie said. "What's your name?"
"Pearlie Gates," the old man replied defiantly. "What's yourn?"
Pearlie smiled. "Pearlie Gates, same as yours. So like it or not, I'm your grandson. And I've had a devil of a time chasing you over half the country."
"What for?" the old man asked.
"So I could tell you you've got a grandson, and I was named after you," Pearlie insisted. There followed a pause while the old man strained to think over the possibility. Finally, he put it all together.
"You're Nathaniel's boy?"
His head was swimming again, and this time not from the fever. When he had left Texas after his wife died, Nathaniel was a baby.
"That's right," Pearlie replied. "One of 'em. Nathaniel had three boys, Reuben, John, and me. He had a girl, too. Her name is Esther."
"Your daughter-in-law's name is Rachel. That's my mother. And she sent me to find you, to tell you that your son died when he took sick after getting bucked off a horse." It was almost too much to swallow for the old man.
"My son? That baby?
is dead?
Yes, Pearlie said.
So, Grandpa, Mama sent me to tell you that, and to let you know that he thought enough of you to name me after you. The old man mulled that over for a long moment, before suddenly cocking his eyes suspiciously at the young man, giving him this response.
Well, young feller, I've got to admit, that's one hell of a story. But I have some bad news for you. That big cache of gold dust hid under a rock in French Creek turned out to be a corker of a tale, too. There weren't no gold, and it cost the life of my partner, and damn near killed me to find that out.
He smirked at Pearlie and asked,
Am I still your grandpa?
Pearlie didn't answer right away. He paused while he fished for something in his vest pocket. In a moment, he held a velvet pouch in his hand and offered it to the old man. Has it been too long for you to remember this? His grandpa took the small blue velvet pouch from him, and his fingers began to tremble slightly as he pulled the silver locket from inside, fumbling as he opened it. Mama said that's the locket you gave my grandmother when you asked her to marry you, Pearlie said softly, as tears began to form in the old man's eyes.
Mercy, darling,
the old man mumbled softly as the tears found their way down the wrinkled face.
I couldn't stay there after you were gone.
Well, do you think you can eat something now?
Lena sang out, wiping a tear from her eye. She was afraid if she didn't break the mood, she might end up bawling, and she didn't think that would be good for her image.
It's past time to start some breakfast, and we've got deer meat and beans on the menu.
And I'll bake some biscuits,
Mamie volunteered. In the drama of the previous moments, no one had noticed when she sat up in bed and dried her eyes with a corner of the sheet. The mood changed after that first tearful meeting of grandfather and grandson to one of celebration. It was considerably more positive when it became apparent that, although the old man's wounds were grave, they evidently had not hit any internal organs. He was eating for the first time since Mamie found him behind her outhouse, and that was a positive sign. Since there was no surgeon available, however, he would be carrying the slugs in the muscles of his chest and back permanently. Most of that morning was spent with Pearlie bringing his grandfather up to date on the family and the Triple G Ranch in Lamar County, Texas. The old man was fascinated to hear about the successful cattle operation his son had created and was eager to return to Texas when his grandson proposed it.
"You sure I'd be welcome?" the old man asked. "After all, I ran out on your great-grandma and left her with a young'un to raise."
"You'll be welcome," Pearlie assured him. "They wouldn't have sent me way out here to find you if you weren't welcome. And now it looks like you're going to make it back from that ambush, so I'm thinking we'll just stay here till you're well enough to ride." There was one more thing Pearlie had to think about. He had promised Lena he would see her safely to Deadwood, and he intended to keep that promise. He couldn't leave her stranded on her own, like she was when he first found her. Maybe he could persuade Mamie to stay on in Hill City a little longer, at least until he had time to take Lena to Deadwood. By then his grandpa might be able to ride, and they could start for home. Things would be a great deal better if the outlaws that jumped the old man and his partner hadn't stolen his horse.
"I'm sure gonna miss that horse," Pearlie's grandfather lamented. "As fine a horse as I ever rode," he went on. "He was an Injun pony, a paint. His hindquarters were solid brown, all the way to his hoofs. Made him look like he was wearing a pair of pants. I traded a fine horse for that pony. I was riding a big old Black Morgan that a U.S. deputy marshal gave me for helping him capture an outlaw hiding out in the San Boys Mountains. Wasn't nothing wrong with the Morgan, but that paint just suited my style.
Pearly still had supplies Mamie could use for cooking, but he needed to go hunting. They could use some more meat, and his grandfather said the deer were coming back to the creek since the miners moved out, so Pearly decided to take care of that need later toward evening when the deer would be feeding. When he told Mamie what he wanted to do, she agreed to stay on, since he was going to supply them with food, but she preferred to go to Deadwood with him when he took Lena there. She had been apprehensive about packing everything she planned to carry on her mule and make the trip by herself. Pearly could hardly blame her for that, so it looked like they were all going to have to wait until his grandfather was well enough to ride. The group would go to Deadwood together. Then Pearly and his grandfather could turn around and head for Texas, which now seemed 10,000 miles away. Pearly's planning kept coming back to the one problem he hadn't figured out. He needed another horse. Later that afternoon, when his grandfather felt like talking again, Pearly asked him about the men who shot him.
"They hit us when we was asleep," his grandpa said.
"So you didn't see 'em, or even how many there were?"
"Oh, I know how many there were," Grandpa replied. "I'm pretty sure there was two of 'em, and I got a pretty good idea which two they were."
Pearly asked how he knew that if he was asleep when they shot him, and Grandpa told him.
"There's two fellers that moved in on a claim about 100 yards downstream from where we was panning. They said the feller who was working it left for Deadwood, but that feller told us he wasn't going to leave his claim. We knew our claim was played out, but we worked it for a few days to keep anybody snooping around from finding out we was really working to get that gold that was supposed to be hid under a big rock in the side of the bank. Anyway, them two fellers kept coming around to see if we was making any money. They didn't look like they'd done any mining, except maybe in somebody else's pockets. Like I said, I didn't get a look at 'em that night, but I'd bet anything they're the ones who jumped us and left us for dead. I had to play dead, so I never moved a muscle the whole time they was going through my pockets. If one of them had a felt my pulse, they'd have known I weren't dead. My heart was beating about 100 miles an hour when they dragged me and my partner away from the fire. They rolled me over the edge of a gully and dropped his body on top of me. I lay there for a hell of a long time under his body till I decided it was safe enough to crawl away from that gully."
"How did you come to partner up with the man with you?" Pearly asked. "Was his name Lem Wooten?"
"How do you know that?" Grandpa responded.
Pearly told him he had found out in Custer City that his grandpa had left town with Wooten.
"Well, that's a fact, but I didn't know him before that. When I first started up that creek, I came upon a feller laying in the middle of the trail, shot full of holes and looking like he'd been scalped. He was still alive, but not by much. I dragged him out of the road and tried to see if I could do anything for him, but he was too far gone. He said some outlaws jumped him and took everything he had, except his trousers and his boots. He said he was trying to get back to his brother's place in Custer City. Hell, it must have been only 4 or 5 miles to Custer. I told him I'd take him there, but he didn't look to me like he'd make it another mile. I stayed with him that night, but the next morning he knew he was fixing to die. He told me to pull off his boot, so I did, and there was a piece of doe skin wrapped around his foot. It had a map drawn on it to show where a gold treasure was buried. Only problem was, it didn't say where in the world it was located. He said to take it to his brother in Custer City, where he had a blacksmith shop, and that he knew where the claim was. I figure he wanted to make sure his brother got his share of that gold. He died a few hours after that.
and I went on back to Custer to find Lem Wooten.
But you never found that treasure? Pearlie asked.
Oh, we found it, Grandpa snorted. I was lying when I told you there weren't no gold. The trouble was, we were afraid to dig it out from under that rock. Those two fellers got wind of it somehow, and they were sticking pretty close to us. They must have knowed Lem's brother had struck it rich. I wonder if they're still looking for that gold.
His comment hit Pearlie as something he hadn't considered. I wonder if they are still looking for that treasure. He decided right away that it was worth a look. Maybe the man who shot his grandpa and murdered Lem Wooten might still be at that mining claim. Pearlie was going hunting anyway, so he might find more than deer down French Creek.
Tell me how to find that claim you crawled here from.
It's on that flap of deerskin you found wrapped around my foot, he said. That'll take you to the claim. But there's something more you have to know to find that buried gold. When we figure it's safe, we'll go there and dig that gold out of there. He grinned at Pearlie and winked.
With the help of the map, Pearlie had very little trouble finding the spot where his grandfather and Lem Wooten were attacked. The old man had given him ample signs to look for to make sure he was at the right claim. When he figured he was getting close to it, he became more cautious and rode a few hundred yards closer before dismounting and leading Buck through the pines that skirted the rapidly flowing creek. Even though his directions were detailed, Pearlie was still wary of the possibility of sneaking up on the wrong claim. Another 50 yards or so, and he spotted smoke up ahead, so he left his horse there, and with his rifle in hand, he began to advance cautiously through the pine trees. I hope to hell I know what I'm doing, he thought, for he wasn't sure what he was actually going to do. He inched his way closer until he could see two men sitting by the fire, drinking coffee. Still uncertain if they were the right two men, Pearlie hesitated to confront them, until he saw the horses tied to a rope stretched between two trees near the water beyond them. There was no mistaking one of the horses. The paint that looked like it was wearing a pair of brown trousers. The men had not even taken the saddle off. Pearlie noticed then that four of the six horses he saw tied to the rope were saddled. Maybe the men were getting ready to give up on their search for gold. Or maybe they never cared enough to pull the saddles off. Back to what he should do. He couldn't decide. The men were thieves and murderers, but he didn't like the role of judge, jury, and executioner. He was still trying to decide what to do when he took a step to the side without looking down to see the rotten pine limb beneath his foot. When his weight came down on the dried limb, it cracked loudly, causing both men to startle at once. With no choice left to him, Pearlie walked out of the trees, his rifle trained on them. All right, he warned. Don't make any move that's going to get yourselves shot. Stunned, both men stood and stared for a moment, before realizing Pearlie was alone. Then one of them reached for his pistol. But there was little time to aim and no time to think. Pearlie's reflexes took charge, sending a rifle slug into the man's right shoulder, spinning him around. His partner threw both hands up when Pearlie ejected the spent shell and brought the Winchester to bear on him. "Unbuckle your gun belt and let it drop," Pearlie commanded. He glanced back at the man he had shot and warned him. "If you pick up that pistol again, the next shot is going in your chest. Back away from it." The wounded man did as he was told and stepped away, his face twisted in pain from the shoulder wound, his arm hanging useless and bloody. His partner, having obeyed Pearlie's order to drop his gun belt, found his voice when Pearlie didn't shoot them both down. "What do you want from us, mister? There ain't no gold here. It played out long ago."
"I ain't after gold," Pearlie replied.
You two tried to murder my grandpa, and you murdered his partner and stole their horses. You've got to pay for that.
Now hold on there, mister.